You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome back to the Van Flip Podcast. I am your host, Lurk. Just want to say thank you for checking out and supporting the podcast and joining us on this next episode. If you dig what we're doing over here, give us a like, share us with your friends, give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening to us on. It greatly helps us out. Check out lambgoat.com for all your hardcore metal and metalcore news updates, plus a little bit of drama. You can follow us on social media at lambgoat on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on Facebook as well. If you want to check out any of these podcasts in video format, you can head over to our YouTube channel. Definitely check it out and give us a sub. If you want to support our Patreon page, your monthly donation supports the podcast and helps us grow and become a better podcast to take over the world. You know how it is. Our guest this week, you may know from his time in The Chariot. At one point, he was also the original vocalist for Norma Jean, but currently, he sings in the band 68, Josh Chauvin.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is stuff. Oh no. Oh no. Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
All right, whenever you're ready. Oh, damn.
We're okay. Almost done.
We've
already been talking it
out. Oh, my God. All right. God, I hate starting these things, man. It's like the most awkward part.
Let's not.
We've already been talking.
Let's not start it.
Okay, yeah. We'll just get into it.
Like, you could just throw a little, like, thing that says my name or something so people are like, who is this dude?
Yeah, we could do that.
Oh, now you're going to hang out. Now that we're doing the video, you're going to hang out with me.
Yeah, now that we're going.
She's completely annoyed, she needs
the FaceTime.
Avoiding
the
me the whole time. She's like, oh.
Well, here we are with Josh of 68. Do you go by 68 or is it they are 68?
68.
Cool.
When you're visualizing it, it's always apostrophe 6 and 8.
Like
but,
the year.
Yes, because it is a reference of the year. But the Instagram and Facebook, you can't do apostrophes. So we came up with they are.
They
68,
are. So I always, in my head, was like, we are.
Yeah, that's not us.
Yeah, no. I found that out.
yeah. They are 68's our social world, but...
Go ahead and follow that right now. They are 68, and you can also
like,
yeah, we're just gonna knock that out.
Snap, whatever you do. I don't
go ahead, smash that like button on this podcast if you like it, and subscribe to the Lambgoat podcast or the Lambgoat YouTube. That'd be dope. If you're listening to us on a platform, audio only, that you can, rate and share.
No idea.
Yeah, I think you can rate and share your podcast on pretty much anything.
You can share anything.
Yeah. So go ahead and just do that. And then we'll still be here, so it's all good.
You should say that stuff after so that they can listen to it and go, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, but see, if I throw it in, like, as we're talking, they can't, it's just like...
No, but think about it. They'll be like, oh, let me stop this real quick, go share it and like it and all this stuff, and then they may not come back to it.
Well, we'll come back around to it at the end, I think. You're right.
What are you doing, dog?
She just wants to sniff,
literally,
man.
Has nothing to do with me until those cameras come on. I see how you're going to be.
So you guys are currently on a little tour, a little stint here, with the 68. What is the reference to the year? Is it a special reference or?
My father had a 68 Camaro.
I was wondering if it was about a car.
And, he's passed away now, but he, it was a cool car. And, I wanted a name that could kind of be global, like kind of worldwide, and I liked the idea that if, no matter what country you're in, visually, everyone has the same numbers, I think, as far as I'm aware, close enough. And so, no matter what country you're in, if you see apostrophe 6 and 8, you may say different words,
right.
You may call it, but visually
mentally,
it's all the same.
It's, all the same.
It's not like something that has to be translated or anything. So,
interesting.
So that, and then the 68 Camaro that my father owned was just, and I like the, yeah, just everything kind of made sense to make it that name. I've been in bands prior to this and,
what?
Yeah, a couple bands.
Wow, man, weird.
And, they weren't, you know, they're not for the masses. I mean, 68's not really for the masses either, but 68's way closer to something that, like, I think my dad would have really been stoked on, because he loved rock and roll. And
so did he pass after you started 68?
Before.
Or no, I'm sorry, before. That's what I meant to say. Yeah, I don't know why I said after, but yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of there was a few things that sort of lined together to make sense to call the band that. And I just liked how short it was.
Like, for some reason, I was thinking Mustangs. When I see the 68,
Camaro,
in my head, the Mustang, you know what I mean? I don't know why.
I mean, as long as you're thinking cool car, I don't really
muscle
care.
Muscle cars, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So you're from Atlanta.
True.
Something that's been really, really on my brain, your opinion about specifically, you're from the birthplace of Chick-fil-A.
True.
Have you tried the Popeye sandwich yet?
The Popeye sandwich?
Yeah, the chicken sandwich. That's like the big thing going on.
I don't even know. Oh my goodness,
Josh, come on.
I'm sorry. I do very little fast food. That's not true. But I'm going to say it. Other than Taco Bell, way too much. I do very little fast food this day and age because but I'll have to try the Popeye chicken.
I mean, not really. I was only going to necessarily ask you, like, which side of the fence you were on, just because you are from, like, technically the birthplace of Chick-fil-A.
I think we invented Chick-fil-A. We also invented Waffle House.
Really?
We also invented Coca-Cola, so you're welcome.
I was addicted to that for so long.
Me too. You're not now?
I go off and on.
I'm completely off.
I'm off now, but, like,
I'm super. I haven't had it in probably 3-4 years. I mean, all I ever drank was Coke.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's exactly how I was.
That's all that needs to be. But, I actually quit because when you're born in Atlanta, you're bottle-fed Coca-Cola until you can chug it yourself.
And, just put a nipple on, like, the glass bottle and just give it to you.
And I mean, our whole city's Coke.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, everything's got big red everything.
Yeah. The Super Bowl, when it happened some time ago in Atlanta, it was a Pepsi-sponsored thing.
I remember that, and was like what is that mind? All about? And
they're like, what is that even doing here in the city?
It's kind of like the Chick-fil-A Popeye thing going on right now. You should look into that.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, speaking of Coca-Cola, I gave it up for like a year. And then, you know, I was hanging out with a friend of mine who constantly only drinks Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Shout out, Kyle. But he constantly just only drank Coca-Cola. So hanging out there, I was like, all right, well, I drink it. It's not like I don't drink it, but I was avoiding it for that year.
Right.
And then I started to drink it again, and then slippery slope, you know, just sucking
it'll
it down.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where I was literally just like, I wouldn't even savor it.
Get it in. Yeah.
It was really
so I was on tour. I drank it hard. All the time. That's all I ever drank.
Well, on tour is readily available everywhere.
Well, it's like one of the things you get for free sometimes at venues.
If you're not drinking alcohol.
And you don't have, I don't drink alcohol. So Coca-Cola was the next thing that would be free. Sometimes. And so anyway, I was actually on tour with Every Time I Die. We were in Europe and, my friend Daniel was drumming at the time for them. We'd always hang out and go get coffee or whatever. And, we didn't plan it or anything, but just sort of with about a week or 2 weeks went by and I kind of just realized like, well, I haven't had a Coke, like, cause we drink coffee and then, I like sparkling water. And so they would have that readily available in like Germany and stuff like that. And so didn't even think about it, but just didn't have any Coke. And then, I got home, it was like right before Christmas and I got home and just never came up. And then one time I remember it was January something. And someone was like, oh, you want a Coke? And I remember thinking like, do I
really want it?
Am I doing this? Like, cause now it's been, I don't know, that like 3 weeks to 4 weeks or so. I'm like, am I going to do a thing or am I just going to not do a thing? And so I was just kind of like, I said, no, I don't want a Coke. And then, I just slowly but surely from time to time, I would like, people would, see me and be like, are you losing weight or whatever? And I'd be like, maybe.
That's the craziest thing about not drinking Coke.
And therefore, I just kept not drinking.
Yeah.
Because I was like, noticed. I'm losing weight without doing anything.
Right,
like,
just living my life.
That's nice. So, yeah, I haven't drank it in a few years, but.
I gave up alcohol for an entire year just to see if I could.
Sure.
That drastically changed how I drank alcohol afterwards.
Right.
But, no, ma'am. But I also gave up Coke, and I was like, damn, I'm losing like 30 pounds at the same time.
So yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not doing anything different. I wasn't active. I wasn't eating any different, but I just was drinking water. And like you were saying, coffee and everything. I don't drink any of that stuff anymore.
Really?
I just drink water. I'll have a beer
every now and then. This is so strange. I don't drink coffee.
Really?
I don't.
You just said you were drinking coffee in Europe.
No, I know, but here's the thing.
When in Rome with Every Time I Die.
No. Not when in Rome with Every Time I Die. That was 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know my dates very good, but I would guess 3 years ago, maybe four. A year ago, we're in August, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Late August.
A year ago, last year, August, I quit coffee, caffeine.
Caffeine
just
in
caffeine,
general?
All of it. And same thing. I kind of just wanted to go a year and just, you know, I like trying to improve oneself, little baby steps here and there, but I drink way too much caffeine all the time, and so I was like, I want to just go a year and see if I feel much better or if I don't. And and the general consensus, I feel way better, and so I've actually given up caffeine too. So I'm about as vanilla as it comes.
I tell you, I had a Coke. I will say this: I split a Coke with my girlfriend, and I could feel like I got hotter.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I got
sure.
hotter. And I was like, damn, this is what everyone was talking about when I was slamming Cokes, but I was just slamming them so much.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. When I quit doing caffeine, I mean, so when I stopped Cokes, I was still drinking coffee. And I mean, coffee is one thing. I was drinking Monsters and Red Bulls.
Yeah,
and
I don't. I can't mess with any of that.
Yeah, I was messing with it hard. But so when I quit Coke, I didn't really have too much of a withdrawal or anything because I was still just down in caffeine hard. Mm-hmm. But when I quit caffeine, I mean, it was
headaches and stuff.
Like people are like, oh yeah, 2 weeks to a month. I'm like, I think like 3 months in, I was still just like not
really
fun to be around and like real irritable and just like, you know, didn't know if like life was worth it and stuff. You know what I mean? Like it's a
real life
chemical,
without anything.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And so I would just be, but again, I'd kind of already set in my mind I want to try a year. And so now I'm at the year, and I feel so much better that I am pretty much committed to just being like, cool, I'm down with not doing caffeine, which is the other thing some bands get for free when you're – so basically anything you would normally get for free, I'm like, no thanks.
No, thank you. Do you have any Pellegrino or sparkling water maybe?
Exactly. Could I be more difficult and get something crazy? But
just put on your rider going forward, you know?
Yeah. That's what I do, but, you know, that's assuming we get our writer.
Right.
But, what was I going to say? When I'm, now that it's been a year, like, if I'm in somewhere really, really nice and there's, like, tiramisu, I might have a tiramisu because there's, like, caffeine in it,
right.
I think.
I honestly don't know how much caffeine I intake now because I never, ever really drank coffee or And for some reason, when Red Bull and Monster and all that stuff started coming out, something in me was that's not good.
I don't think you need anyone to tell you it's not good.
Yeah,
I think
why do you need
know.
To be jacked up even more than you already are?
It's like, I think somewhere deep inside, I think most of us know the things you
They don't come in small,
avoid.
You know, like 5-Hour Energy, I get it, but even then, I don't mess with that either. But the 5-Hour Energy comes in like a little thing.
Yeah, right.
The Monster can, I've never seen a Monster can like a Coke can. It's always like
a
tall boy.
Down those like big fatties too.
Yeah.
And, I mean, cause you do like, we were on Warped Tour a couple years and those are sponsored
rock
by
stars
Monster.
And all that stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so you're just like, it's free and I'm broke. So it's like,
of course,
you
it's
know.
Liquid.
And, I feel much better. I really do.
Do you eat healthier? Like
no
food-wise?
no.
It's usually how it goes. We just drink good, but
that's my next step. I, like I said, every little bit I want to try to implement I like the idea of improving oneself, you know? I do need to eat a lot better. Like I said, I do Taco Bell pretty hard when I,
yeah, but I mean, like, that's not that bad. Out of all the fast foods, that probably is like the healthiest one.
No.
It's gotta be kind of up there. There's nothing. I mean, you're eating cardboard taco shells and stuff like that, but you know, other than that.
I sure don't know, but again, you know, that like little inner voice you're talking about that said like Monster's probably not very good. Like something's like.
So when I pull up to Taco Bell, I'm like, it's not the worst one I could be at.
I guess it depends on what you get. You can probably get like some bean and something is probably like whatever, but I don't get that.
Well, I know a lot of bands on tour that have like either vegetarian or vegan people in their band.
Yeah, right.
Taco Bell is big for them. Is that something that you're going to maybe try to go to? Because the more I even look into anything and everything, and the more people I have on this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, like Pete from Roaring Never and Ether Coven was big in, I mean, he's a vegan. Okay. So like we had a big discussion about it, even off the podcast about, cause he feeds his dog a vegan diet too.
Right, right.
And his dog's like 16, 15 years old. So we kind of went back and forth on that. That's something that I like teeter with in my head,
sure.
But I don't know if I could do it.
I think I'm a future vegan. I'm not like, I'm from the South, but I'm not one of those like, you know, meh, you know, yeah. Barbecue forever. Cause I know that things change and you just learn more, you know, you learn more about the garbage that you're putting in your body and the, you know, the drawbacks and stuff. And so I'm sure I need to eat better and like working out, like I don't do any of that.
Yeah.
And I need to, that's definitely something that's, you know, on the to-do list or whatever, but, yeah, it's funny. This is surely one of the longer discussions of
what you're eating.
Your
like, you're just this is under the surface Josh talk.
This is just some weird life tips. But yeah, it's funny. I'll do a whole tour and none of this will come up because I'm not like, you know, evangelically like, you know how like you meet some vegans and right. stuff that are so evangelical about it. I try not to like bother anyone with, you know, my world, but yeah, since it did come up, I've caffeine free since last year, and
well, that's good,
and my next steps are probably eating better and like exercising or doing something.
I just started I've never really been one to work out, especially cardio wise.
Yeah.
I know you and I are roughly like in the same ballpark as ages go.
Yeah.
So 2 months ago, I can't believe I'm going to say this on here, but 2 months ago I started running because, as you're well aware, Lamb Goat is filled with nice people on the message board and comment yeah. section. So, I was never like a big dude mm-hmm. in my own eyes.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. Yeah.
But now that I'm like on the internet and on video and stuff like that.
Now that you're super famous.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I got the clout. they've pointed out to me that I am not as thin as I thought. So, you know, I said in my inner monologue, I was like, well, I've always wanted to be
sure.
more healthy and
yeah.
and more in shape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, I'm gonna start running. So I've been running for like the last 2.5 months.
That's cool.
I did 5 miles yesterday, which was insane for me.
That's cool.
That's
in this Florida heat. That's,
I know.
That's 5 miles, like 10
actually,
miles.
I ran from here, this house, mm-hmm. to where the venue's at.
And oh, right on.
So it was far.
That's a hike.
Yeah, but
I don't know anything about that world. I've done little bits here and there, like if we're on a tour and they do it all, like mm-hmm. I might try to join them or whatever. But I've never. How do I put this? I've never exercised to the point where I felt the benefit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's 100%. Always bummer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I know for a fact, like scientifically speaking, it has to cross a point where it's no longer bummer. Now you start feeling the,
right.
the energy and the,
right.
I know that mathematically that's the outcome, but I've never made it that point. I've only made it to the point where
even
if I'm like 2 weeks in, 3 weeks in, I'm like, everything's sore for long that's... and I'm so tired and so I know I need to like break through that at some point.
That's
you know?
Why I think I used to, like work out. I used to be in gyms sometimes and I would lift weights and stuff, but mm-hmm. I was never running. Cardio was not my thing.
Right.
So this time around I was like, well, cause you gain weight when you lift and do other things
because
you add muscle. So you kind of gain weight. So I was like, I'm going to just lose weight.
Yeah. Right.
And then I'll work on lifting and stuff like that.
Makes
so,
sense.
But yeah.
Well, where are you at? How are you feeling?
Oh,
this is great, or you're like,
yeah,
I'm always tired.
And you get addicted to it, to running.
See, I've never done that.
Yeah.
It's always just, I mean, just like,
Oh, it'll definitely check you. Like, when you start it, when you start, it'll check you real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did like this little app, the Nike Run Club app.
Okay.
And I was honest with the app, and I put it in I don't do anything, and I'm heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
So what should I do?
Well, Lamb Goat says you're heavy.
Yeah, Lamb Goat did, and that's probably why I was thinking that. But,
I'm Lamb Goat heavy. So Lamb Goat heavy could be pretty small. You
meanwhile,
know?
Everyone on there is probably way heavier than me. But
for sure.
Yeah, I started doing it, and it was brutal. Like, literally brutal.
Yeah.
But now, like I said, 5 miles, I could do like a mile of not even sweating. And it's like crazy. It's only been 2 months.
A friend of mine's hard in the health. And like, he swears that like, it like you said, it's addictive. Like, he'll wake up, like if he can't physically run for whatever reason sometime, like he'll have like he just, it's a joy. Like, he wakes up and he's like, I've got, it's something that I want to do. He wakes up at like 4 a.m. if it needs to do it. But he says, he claims it's because of the pure joy of running and the addiction of running and all the good stuff that you, that I guess is good to be addicted to, you know, all that stuff. So
he's endorphins and all that good
stuff.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh yeah, man, if I gotta wake up at 4 a.m. to make it happen, it's a joy. I love it. You know, and I'm just like, I have never been to that point.
No, see, I love sleeping.
Dude. So, I love sleeping, and there's so many times where I can't get it.
Yeah. But I mean, I'll run, and this is the dumb part on my behalf, because I am in the heat. Mm-hmm. I'll run like midday. So I'll just be like a tomato when I get home. You know?
I know I'm from Georgia, so it's not that, but it's a big difference between Georgia and Florida, and I can't even believe the way it was today. I mean, now it's raining, so it feels good out there, but I got out of the van. The van's all freezing cold. We have it as cold as it can be. And when I got out, I was like, oh, it's so thick out here, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was rough. But, yeah, good on you for running in the heat.
Hey, I'm trying it out, man. You know what I mean? I've gotten this far, so it'll be interesting to see how far and how long I can keep
doing
it.
Do you do it every day?
No. Every other day? I'm on, like, a program.
Okay.
So it's like you have rest days and you do other kind of things.
Gotcha.
If I don't run for like 2 days, that next run is like
hard,
the worst. And then like say I did 5 miles yesterday. If I don't run for 2 days, I could barely do a mile and a half.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? So it's like crazy. But you should definitely get into it. I mean, you lose weight like crazy too,
right?
And especially you're not putting. I mean, you're putting like food in there, but not like liquid calories and other things like that, like sugar and stuff. Do you eat sugar?
Yeah.
That's another bad thing.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, I've tried to give that up. But I'm a candy guy. I'm a candy guy, chocolate guy.
I like chocolate. Like I said, I don't eat healthy. I'm better than I used to be, but only because of just, because sometimes when you're broke, you just have to eat garbage. You know what I mean? But I still am better than I used to be because so obviously when you're on tour, you stop at gas stations all the time, no matter what. And every single time I used to have to get something, candy or something.
Cause you get bored too.
Yeah. You're just bored and you're just like, I gotta eat. And it's like, this is something to do for the next, 40 seconds. It's not long.
Walk around this lit place. Yeah, you're probably stopping a lot of times in the middle of the night.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I used to eat all Reese's peanut butter cups and all the candy and stuff. But, now I try to stick more with, whatever nuts. And if I get a bar of some sort, like a protein bar or something, which might be better. I don't know, but.
Well, when you're working out or not work, I shouldn't say working out, but when you're more active, like I'm not on a diet or anything like that, but I'm more conscious of like what I'm eating as far as like how it will affect me running the next day.
Yeah. Right.
So that's,
well, playing shows every day is, again, I don't eat healthy, but like, even just like, if I realize I haven't drank water much that day, like maybe we're just driving that day and I just haven't come around to drinking water, the show in my mind at least suffers the next day because I'm like
dehydrated
and whatever. Cause you typically on an average show, like I'm spitting all the time. Like I just,
you're also a pretty sweaty guy when you're up there too. Sure. You're moving around a lot.
Yeah. And so my mouth, I'm just always spitting, whatever. And I can tell if the day before I haven't drank any water, or very little, my mouth's all dry.
And that's
very rare for me. And so, I say all that to say like eating healthy is definitely there's wisdom behind it. I would imagine.
So have you always not drank alcohol? Is that like a thing that you've always done?
No.
You just kind of gave it up at some point?
Yeah. I gave it up at some point. And cool. I found my... I'm better to be around. I don't mind being sober. You know what I mean? I don't mind. I'm not very good at not being in control.
Mm-hmm.
Which maybe...
Were you all... I'm not trying to be out of line, but were you, like, getting wasted?
Well, I mean, you know, I've had a long life.
You're a road dog, so to speak, too, you know what I mean?
I've been around for a minute. But, those phases where, you know, you're young or whatever, like, I'm talking, like, middle school, high school and stuff, you know. But there was enough stuff happening around me, a few pretty tragic things, and then a few things that just... I could sort of see the common thread. So for me, myself, I just found it easier to, and I started my first band in high school, and I was just kind of it was in that area where I was just like, I like doing music. I want to put I think the bottom line is I have a very addictive personality.
Yeah.
This kind of goes back to Coke and coffee. Someone watching this that's like, Coke, who cares about Coke? It's like, well, I mean, I really do have a very kind of like addictive personality. So I find that, as long as I keep shoving that towards something productive like art or whatever, I find mentally I can sort of navigate the waters a lot easier.
It's also a lot more beneficial for you to focus that on.
Yeah,
that
and of... like anyone around me, I think benefits from it as well. But you know, when I get into something a little bit, everything is a slippery slope, whether it's good in art or mm-hmm. whether, you know, for me. And so, yeah, I just, through this, like, pretty semi-chunk of time of my life, enough things was happening around that I was, like, the common thread wasn't anything that I felt like was beneficial for me. So, I was just sort of, like, I want to do this, I want to do music, and mm-hmm. I like being kind of in control, or at least the thought of a control, or at least pretending to be in control, and then, like, I like... you know, remembering everything and knowing where, you know, I like it. I try my best to enjoy life, you know, so that's just for me, you know?
Yeah. I had almost a similar conversation with Keith, from Every Time I Die about, cause he also, I mean, it was very well documented that he was a party guy.
Yeah.
And, it was also documented that he was like allergic to alcohol. So of course I asked him about like, you know, that, what all that was like. And he did give up drinking for a time. And then I found out that the time was like very small. It was like 3-4 months or something.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, one thing that I did notice when I stopped drinking, you might've been much younger. I stopped drinking like 2-3 years ago, regularly, I should say.
Yeah,
I can have a beer every now and then and it'd be okay. But, it was tough for me to be around people in that scenario for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause I could imagine like, that.
Everyone's annoying.
Everyone. Yeah.
If you're not doing anything and everyone else is doing something else.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck.
Annoying is a good word. What's funny. So I'm a little bit introverted by nature. And so if up to my own ability, I probably wouldn't be out like gallivanting much anyway. I'd rather just kind of be in the corner, like working on art or something. But on tour, you're sometimes forced to go mm-hmm. out to whatever. And I find myself, you almost have to kind of lean into it. Like if you're sober and everybody else is not, and they're just getting like, you almost have to like, cause you know where it's all going, you know.
They're going to get this far from your face. Yeah. You're going to smell their breath.
Yeah. They're going to tell you how much they love you.
They're yelling at you right here.
Like, dude, you're a band. You're just like, this is nice.
Oh, I can only imagine you dealing with drunk fans every night too.
Well, that's there's a little bit of that, but even friends.
Oh yeah, for sure. I know, but like fans.
It's so funny.
You know, like that's their one moment to be with you and they're like,
yeah,
you know, 13 sheets to the wind or whatever.
And it can be fun, but it's cool because when I drank Coke, I was always the designated driver since I didn't drink anyway, and so I would be at these bars and people would just buy me Coke all the time. Now I don't drink Coke, And so it gets weird. Like, what do I get you? And I'm like, chicken wings. Like, and so I've like upsold them. You know,
right,
so,
right, right.
You can keep your Coke. I'll just give me some food. But yeah, it's I've been doing it long enough that, you know, being the odd man out or whatever has never bothered me. So but you do almost some, like, cause there's times where I just can't, I'm like, I'm not in the frame of mind to deal with this right now, you know? So, but typically I'll just, if I know I'm going out to a bar or something anyway, and I'm like, well, let's just lean into it. I'll egg them on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, if you can make it fun in your own head, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Like, you can play a game with everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Then it becomes a whole another thing. Yeah. And I'm like the only one with like clear footage that I can blackmail them later.
They don't even remember it at times, but, so I'm going to try to pivot it a little bit, even though this is great. We were talking in the car on the way over here. Your mom was working for McCormick Spices.
Yes.
And I was curious, because like I told you, I've started cooking more recently.
Nice.
I'm not trying to eat healthier. I'm just trying to eat at the house.
Yeah, sure.
And, so what was her, like, was she like working with the spices? Is she like a culinary person? I know you said you weren't, but
she, as far as I'm aware, she was like in the accounting world or something of it. So she worked in a building. And I might have this real wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm close. She worked in a building with other office folks, and then attached was this gigantic warehouse mm-hmm. of what I would presume is spices and things and whatever. But yeah, she, I mean, I will say as a company, they seem to be phenomenal. She had nothing but good things to say about them. She's retired now via the company and, but I grew up with just, you know, a myriad of spices, like all things you've heard of, things you haven't. And, you know, I just, my mom would make dinners and stuff, but I never thought of her necessarily as like trying these crazy things. But because we had them always around the house, mm-hmm. You know, I would just, oh, let me try throwing this on there and mm-hmm. that tastes like garbage. Let me try, you know, and so, yeah, now fast forward to where I am now, I have, you know, I have a spice rack full of stuff that, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of people, maybe even chefs that know a thing or two would be like, why would you, those would never go together. But right. I'm like, well, they do
for me
in my mouth.
Yeah. So what is your, yeah, that was one of my, that was one of my questions that I actually had was your like kitchen always just smelling like crazy with the spices and like what is your favorite like combination with spices, you know what I mean? Because now you're saying you're like putting stuff together that's like not supposed
so
to be.
Like it's so my parents always provided dinner and stuff, but I never thought of them as what is it necessarily like. Or at least in my mind, it wasn't like chefs where they were right. like cooking all these, you know what I mean? Like I think like Thursdays we had what we called find it, fix it, which is just like you go in, find it and you fix it right. and clean it up. And then Fridays was almost essential, like always, burgers and hot dogs mm-hmm. grilled out and thing.
You probably had an order out evening as well.
Yeah. Well, we kind of lived in the woods. We lived, real deep in the woods. So there's no one delivered to
you
us.
You mean before Atlanta, there was Douglasville?
Yes. Okay. So I live in Douglasville, still currently and, born and raised in Douglasville proper. But, where I lived, so our house was nice and fine and dandy, but, and we had some acreage. I don't know how much, but our backyard was, this guy who invented the tranquilizer dart. His name is Red Palmer and he had 600 acres. So I live in like lived in the woods. They weren't all ours, but they were.
Didn't know we were there.
So my point is we had nothing that could deliver to us. So, we at one phase of life, I'm talking maybe 3 or 4 months, we ordered a pizza one time because we had this party going on or something at my house and like, we ordered this pizza and my dad literally was just like, yo, bring us this pizza. I'll make it worth your while.
Right.
And, whoever answered the phone was like, cool, I'll do it. He just took a, trusted us. I don't know what he tipped them, but I know that for like 6, maybe 7 months, anytime we needed to order a pizza, we could. Yeah. And for us, that was huge because we never ordered any food ever, to deliver to us, you know? And so for these few months, I mean, we milked it. And, I would like to know how much my dad tipped this guy because it became a thing where right. every time we'd get pizza, he'd have to tip this, like, help him out because we were middle of nowhere, you know? But, so it was always just food that you had at the house or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. It was never like, oh, let's just order in Chinese or anything.
Do you, was there any like hunting situation going on for you? Cause you're out there?
No.
Like no one around you guys, you were not eating like game or anything?
I mean, we saw stuff, but my dad never really hunted. I think mm-hmm. he did maybe when he's like younger, but as far as like, we never hunted, we fished a lot. Not on property, but you know, if we went out, we'd go fishing and, but yeah, I have some uncles that hunted, and I don't think my dad.
Have you ever dabbled?
No, I've never shot an animal to eat it.
Do you have a interest? Not an interest, but like a, I guess an interest in trying it out.
I would like to have the knowledge to know how it worked,
mm-hmm.
for in case it was ever a scenario where it's like, oh, we're surviving
doomsday.
Now. Yeah, yeah. One good Trump tweet, and here we are. Like, survival,
are you a conspiracy guy?
I love conspiracies. I don't know.
I mean, any of them. All of them to me are like fascinating. But
I like a lot of them. I mean, I'd like to think I'm smart enough to know some of them are just fun to pretend you're into.
Yeah, it's always weird. Like when I started giving up coke, I was like, why? Why is there so much sugar in this? But then I had this weird thing about, like, they just want to keep you fat.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who are the proverbial yeah, they yeah, are. Yeah. But they just want to keep you fat, so you rely on their health care and the insurance and blah.
Well,
so that's part of why I started getting, like, I should get my shit together.
I think, it's just sugar's addictive. I think that, I mean, it's not.
Processed sugar, I think yeah, natural yeah, sugar yeah, is okay, yeah, yeah. But processed sugar is, like, the worst.
It's not, and here's a conspiracy theory, but I think it's true. But I don't know. I haven't really done my, like, I haven't Googled it, so I don't know. But
I haven't gone past the first page on Google.
Yeah. I haven't researched it. I love that. That one of my favorite things is people are like, well, I was researching on blah, blah, blah. It's like, what, you Googled it
yeah.
once? That's not, like, you can't define that as researched. Like,
did you talk to any scientists or yeah. anything?
Yeah. So I've been researching on sugar the other day. But anyway, I don't think it's, I think it's a pretty known fact that Coca-Cola in its beginning just used cocaine. So it's like, they know they're good marketers. You yeah. know what I mean?
Them you gotta and pivot that. Folks, you know, you gotta,
they know how to like, yeah.
God, that would have been insane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I yeah, don't yeah. even want to know what that would be. Cause I've personally never tried.
Yeah. yeah.
So, it would have been wild to see that shit. But I mean, weren't they using heroin to like,
well,
cure your cough and stuff back in the day?
Yeah, I was about to say, like, to be fair, if I mean, nobody, I don't think we need to give them the benefit of the doubt here, but
hopefully they just didn't realize what they were doing.
Well, I mean, cocaine was used, from what I gather in my research, cocaine was used, when you go to the dentist before they came up with Novocaine.
Oh, wow.
I think they're using cocaine to, and I might be way wrong. This might just be
numb your gums,
garbage material. But I'm pretty positive back in the day, before they knew the addictive qualities, that's the thing they used. And then they came up with Novocaine, or they realized this was insanely addictive, and then came up with Novocaine.
I've heard a lot about the numbing effects of cocaine on people's gums and or faces.
Yeah.
But right. here it is, two dudes that don't do it that are just like, right. Hey, these are the things I know.
Yeah. So, yeah. So maybe there's a world we live in where Coca-Cola company just thought like, oh, here's this thing people seem to like. Let's put it in there.
Put that in the drink.
But they probably were just really good marketing.
Everyone's buying our Coke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. I think there's the 0.01% know what they're doing, you know, so.
I actually saw a video, and you may have seen the same video since you are a Coca-Cola connoisseur of sorts, where this YouTuber, like, made, old school Coke from, like, the 1800s or late 1800s. Yeah, I was waiting for him to put the cocaine in there, obviously. That was not going in, but I was like, huh, I wonder how that would go.
That's funny. I'd like to know how, because supposedly the like secret recipe is still like, cause, so in Atlanta we have the Coca-Cola Museum.
Yeah, I've been there.
And they have, like, apparently the thing is, like, locked away, the recipe or whatever.
In the basement,
like, locked
somewhere.
Away somewhere, yeah.
You guys have the CDC over there, too.
Sure.
Center of Disease Control.
Probably. We have a lot of stuff. Walking
pretty
Dead.
Pretty big market. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got all kinds of stuff.
Pretty big market. We should probably talk about, like, 68 or something.
Band huh? stuff? Lame.
We could talk a little bit, because I know you guys have, you guys just finished recording your album,
we did.
Right?
Just finished.
Is there any kind of, like, date as far as, like, release date for single?
Nothing yet. We so
guest appearances?
We just finished recording with Nick Raskulinix. He did
Foo Fighters
and Deftones and many others. And it was awesome. And we literally just finished it. So now it's kind of in the labels world, you know, and what all they do. And mastering and all that stuff. I just say let, like, my whole go-to is like, oh yeah, now we let the adults handle it, you know? But yeah, it's, it's fun. And, I mean, what can you say about an album that hasn't been said before? You know what I mean?
It's yeah. like, oh, it's our best album that we've done
here.
Yet.
The quiet stuff's, it's like, whatever. It's mm-hmm. just, I mean, we wrote some more songs and I think they're, I love them and I love, I can't wait to be playing them live. We're playing one or two maybe tonight, but they're some of my favorite songs I've ever written. But
really?
Again, surely any artist would say that about the newest. Why would you not write?
Yeah,
them?
When I try to ask like a guest, like, what's your favorite album you've ever done, minus the one you just put yeah. out or are putting out?
But I mean, how weird would it be to be like, oh yeah, I really prefer the album before. You know what I mean? Like, what
this one's okay.
thing. Yeah, like,
it's not a good selling
point. Of
course
I'm going to write my favorite songs. So I don't know anything about release date. I don't know anything about song title. I've got to do all that stuff.
So it's probably technically not even mastered?
It's not mastered.
Yeah, okay.
Not even technically, just, it is not mastered.
You just finished tracking it for the most part.
We just finished, we finished, recording on day X and, I got home, I think I was home for a week or maybe a week and a half, and then we left for tour. So it's like, it literally is still even being mixed and mm-hmm. stuff, like the whole thing's happening. So
you recorded in Nashville, right?
Nashville, yeah.
Does 68, I mean, cause like some bands, I don't want to say change their sound per se per album, but they do mature. Is that something that's going on with this new album? Like, is it somewhat sonically or musically different than the previous two?
I think so, but I would like to think, at least for myself, every album I've ever done, I have no interest in recreating a previous record. So, I don't set, when I'm first starting to write the songs, even whether I was writing in the Chariot or I was writing with this band, like, 68 or anything, I never go, all right, let's make it super different. I just write what's coming to me then, but obviously I'm a different person. I've grown up at that point. I've listened to different music, whatever, different things come to me. But I think because whatever previous record it was, whether it's now or back in the day, whatever previous record is, like, that's been done. So mm-hmm. there's no, I don't need to do that again, you know? And so I would like to think every album's always been able to kind of stand on its own two feet. And you know, maybe people would, disagree with me. I don't imagine anyone from Lamb Goat disagreeing with me, but, I would imagine they would approve.
They're pretty easy
going. I think every album I've ever done, hopefully at least in my mind, has been sort of a new journey, a new adventure without alienating people who liked what they liked before. Like, mm-hmm. Like, there's examples, if you knew the album, on this album, that I could say, like, we've never done this before. Like, there's a whole couple of bits that are real sort of Otis Redding influenced, kind of James Brown world, like, you know, just real funky, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But still kind of rooted in rock and roll, which I find James Brown was. And mm-hmm. you know what I mean? You could swing your hips and still just hear the greatness of riffs, whether it's like some trumpet type riff or a riff, you know, just all those, like all the stuff that combines to make an energetic, performance mm-hmm. on the record, you know, or whatever is there. And so there's things like that on this new record that I really love and got me out of my comfort zone when I was writing the song. I was kind of, you know, really having to, you know, dive into a new area, you know, of my, that I'm not comfortable with. And that's what I enjoy to do. And then there's some songs that's just like, in my humble opinion, this riff is great and I'm going to play it a bunch. You know what I mean?
Ripper of a riff. So
yeah.
I'm going
so, yeah, as I'm writing a song, regardless of what band it's for, it's just sort of, what do I want to listen to today? What do I want to listen to now? And, that almost always is super different than what I was listening to. And also it helps. We don't typically put out albums like once a year.
Right.
I know a lot of bands just smash albums out. I think Every Time I Die puts out albums every year. Or
every years?
They do it so fast, it seems. And here's the thing. I'm looking at you, Every Time I Die. Y'all make great albums. I don't know how they do it. They still make great albums because there's a lot of bands that pop out albums
garbage
every couple of years, and it's just like, man, you know, so with a band like Every Time I Die, who are, you know, some of my longest standing friends, I am inspired and like it blows me away because I don't know that I have that in me. I put out albums, you know, I think the last one, when this one finally comes out, Two Parts Viper, which is our last record, I think will be 3 years old.
Yeah,
maybe
2017, I think it came out.
Something like that. Maybe nearing.
Yeah, Deluxe come out 2018 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, but those were already, we already had those songs recorded. We didn't do anything for those. So my point is, you know, every 3 years or so is when I start getting to the point where I go, yeah, here's songs that I feel good about releasing. But, I mean, Every Time I Die, they pop them out pretty fast, it seems.
Yeah.
But they
it's crazy
it.
When you think about it, like, because I mean that band has been mentioned a lot obviously in
this
podcast, but
I love them.
They're one of the bands that like they ran the gauntlet, you know what I mean? Like they 98 99, and then still today, you know what I mean? They're still doing it, and they lost members, you know what I mean? They even though they've lost members and done this, that, or the other, it's technically almost kind of like they've kept, I mean, the core part of the band is obviously together, but the sound and the environment, energy and stuff like that is just, you know, crazy.
They crush it. And another thing too is they tour a ton, which is something. So I tour a ton. So if you were to go, well, why don't you release albums more often? I would probably just chalk it up to, well, I'm touring all the time. But they also tour all the time, and somehow they're still writing quality enough music to put out, you know,
apparently,
which is crazy.
Apparently they're sitting on a bunch of riffs right now. They don't have anywhere to record or to practice / record it.
Really?
That's what they're looking for. Yeah, they made a post about
that
recently. So.
Yeah.
Do you find it easier to write for the 68 than your previous bands? Because obviously it's just you two, you and Nico and...
I wouldn't say easier. Because the writing process is still similar. In the Chariot, I would write as much as I can, and you know, someone else might write a couple things. So, so that might have been easier as far as if someone had something that was up to par or whatever, it'd be like cool, and then I would only have to come up with 6 or 7 songs or whatever, it is, you know. Whereas 68, you know, I have to come up with the full gamut, but. Writing's, how do I say this? Writing is no matter what band, no matter what, or for me anyway, it's beautifully difficult.
Yeah.
I get into my own head sometimes very, in an unhealthy way sometimes, but I love every minute of it. I love, cause I try to capture a lot of impulsive stuff. I don't try to overthink it. It's rock and roll. It's not supposed to be like, you know, overthought, you know, and so I try to capture a lot of impulsive stuff, but if it's the first song I've written for, you know, like, cause I'm always writing, no matter what. So like if it's the first thing I've written for what will later become an album, I've had sometimes definitely months, but sometimes years to listen to it. And so as impulsive as I try to keep it, sometimes you can't help but be like, ooh, I could actually make that better. You know what I mean? And so I have time to do that, you know? And
well, I know you've said too that you never finish a song. You only abandon it.
Yes.
Yeah, I think
any artist can relate with that. You give me 2 more weeks on anything, I can make it better.
Yeah.
You give me 2 more years, I can make it better. But at some point, you just have to let it go.
Yeah,
you know,
cut it off.
And let it get into the abyss and let people, you know, take it for themselves, you know, and, which is another beautiful part I love. You know, even people that don't like it, even people that go, "Ah, oh, this is garbage," it's like they have that option. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? To not mm-hmm. like. And I've never written music like for the masses or anything, so people not liking it is fine with me because I've never been one. I've never thought about the stuff I've created as like, oh yeah, we'll spoon feed you and you'll love it, you know, because mm-hmm. it's getting played on the radio, it's getting done. It's like yeah. you have to dig into bands. I don't know if this is even a term anymore, but like underground bands, you know, band, like I don't even know if that exists anymore because what does that even mean? But
the internet doesn't make. I mean, I think with the internet, there's now there are underground bands, but the ability to not be underground is
it's really everything's slim. So accessible yeah. that it's hard to cut. But the point is. I've always been in bands that were clearly not top 40s and clearly not being spoon fed because of help of back in the day, MTV or now mm-hmm. radio or whatever. You know, it's like, you just have to, it's work on the audience's part, you know, like me and Nico were driving here actually. And we were talking about how, you know, back in the day, you'd be like, oh, you know, hey, our album's coming out. And it's like, okay, let's pretend there's a person who loves your band. So they drive the Best Buy, don't find it. They drive to Hot Topic. Hot Topic only had two. They sold out, so they can't find. You know what I mean? Like yeah. you're asking a lot of a person, you know. And so I say all that to say that, you know, on the contrary, you have top 40s bands, or just, you know, top 40 is such a broad term right now, but like
radio bands,
or
radio,
they get played on the radio, and they're just like spoon fed, like you're gonna like it, you're gonna like it, you're gonna like it, and
well, if you
and
hear something 12 times a day too, exactly. it's way more
or
palatable.
If it's in the background, you didn't even know at the store you're shopping at, or if it's at this, or I've seen a video, or it's in this
conspiracy
movie that
stuff,
I saw.
Man, conspiracy 0.01% stuff.
0.01% to keep you down. So we've never been like that. I've never been in a band where that's been the thing. So people who, enjoy 68 or enjoy my previous bands, in a way they're invested. They've mm-hmm. invested the time to look it up, or in the case of driving to buy it, or nowadays even streaming it and stuff. I know that's easier, but still, you know, they have to actually like reach out and like grab mm-hmm. it and pull it in versus just someone throwing it at them constantly. And at some point it sticks, you know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And, I have no idea why I started talking about that, but there's my end there.
That's cool. That's all good. No, but one of the things I did want to ask in this, I mean, I already apologize for bringing up X bands, but, how did you even get in to music that's not for the masses? I mean, I know there was a podcast you did with Ray on the 100 Words podcast like a while ago. You talked about like you liking stuff that your brother didn't. You have an older brother, and like basically anything that he likes, you were like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned on there that he threw away Bleach or whatever, the mm-hmm. Bleach cassette, and that you picked that up and you know, you kind of like dove into that. Was that like your intro into like aggressive or more aggressive music?
Maybe. That definitely was the beginning of, but I wouldn't.
Like, are you a big Nirvana fan still? Or
I love Nirvana. But that happened. But that was probably disconnected. I mean, it has to be connected, but that was probably a little more disconnected than what I would see my journey as, because I was so young that I didn't even have, I wasn't going, this is cool. And I know it's cool. Yeah. I just was listening to it for the sheer sake that I knew he wasn't into it. You know what I mean? Like for whatever reason.
Well, that's weird. Cause coming from Atlanta, hip hop and rap is like huge.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So it's just weird that not weird. I shouldn't say, but it's fascinating that you didn't gravitate toward that at all.
It was a journey. It was a very, very long journey. And it definitely, I mean, when I started, my very first concert, very first show that I went to, I paid to
they
go
just
to.
Came to town. The band you're about to tell me.
Bush.
Yeah.
Toadies and Hum. That's
well, just
my
Bush.
First. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Bush, Toadies, and Hum, loved all three bands, and I went to, my parents had to drive me to the Fox Theater and drop me off. So I watched it, and I mean, I love those bands. I love them, love them. But they were on the radio. They were on, yeah. You know, there was nothing necessarily underground about them by any means.
They were technically kind of underground, but that alternative scene was like all the rage.
Well,
and,
the 90s was a weird time, and I was, I kind of love, maybe it's just sort of the nostalgia of it, but I loved, because you could be weird. I mean, like, you see some interviews with, like, Beck back in the day, and it's like, this dude,
how do you ever
weird
make
as
it?
Can be, yeah. And it was amazing that that made it. But my point is, I did that show, I went to that show, and I was, that was it. I was, that very, very moment, I was like, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to try my best to do it. So then I started just going to any show I could. Any show, it didn't matter. If I had the money, I went, I saw Pumpkins on Melancholy Infinite Sadness. I saw Rage Against the Machine. I
saw, oh my goodness,
like,
you are so lucky.
I just saw everything I could see. Everything. Yeah. I saw stuff I didn't even care too much about. But I don't know the exact, anyway, these were all big bands. These were all big, stadium rock type stuff.
Right.
And then I went and saw, I wish I knew exactly who it was, but I went and saw a show at the Masquerade, which is Atlanta, and it's an Atlanta staple, and it was slightly smaller, still, I think, 1200 cap room, 15 maybe, and that was the first, I mean, there's no barricade, there's the singer, you know what I mean? And that was the first time I was like, oh, there's, like, there's
a different vibe. Yeah,
shows.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to skip ahead a bunch, but basically that show made me go to cheaper shows, which I could afford more. So
local,
I was like,
cool. Shows.
Well, not yet local, but I remember I saw like, Unsane, and I saw, Stuck Mojo. I saw,
we're dipping back to the 90s for
so
real.
So many bands. And this one time, and it might have been Stuck Mojo, or maybe it was Unsane, or Orange 9mm, or something. I don't remember. But whatever show it was, a band opened, and they were awesome. And at least I thought they were at that time. But I don't know if they were now. It might have been dated for all I know. But they were like, yeah, we're from right here, Atlanta. And back in those days, you know, especially in your local band, you just played like nearly every weekend. Yeah. So they're like, we're actually playing, you know, 2 weekends from now. And so you should come check it out. And it all clicked. I was like, whoa, they're from here.
Yeah.
Like they live in my home, like Atlanta. And so we went and saw them the 2 weeks, and the singer exited stage and went and sold merch.
Yeah, you were saying that on that podcast. Okay. You were saying this exact story. I can't remember what the band name was, and I'm apologizing for that to help you out with that, but yeah.
It was definitely, so that was the moment, somewhere in all that, it clicked. Local bands. There's bands that are here that are just playing shows here, and they might jump on a cool Stuck Mojo show or whatever, but they're from here. And yeah, somewhere in all that is, you know, I think I even maybe technically started like Norma Jean at the time, but whatever it was that was, those things made me realize, because if you're a kid trying to, you know, like, oh, I want to be in a band, and you're thinking like Smash Pumpkins, like, well, I don't know how to take that step.
Right.
I mean, I still don't know how to take that step.
Yeah,
if you were
to tell me, like, write a Smashing Pumpkins-esque song, I'd be like, no,
yeah,
there's no way.
Or more importantly, hey, go do a Smashing Pumpkins-sized tour.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah.
I don't even know. I've been in the music industry now for so long, and I don't know how to do that. You know what I mean?
I mean, you're playing festivals, kind of. It's almost the same thing, but they're not there for just you, per se.
Yeah, and they hit me up, which is very, very nice of them, but I don't know how to go and get on big stadium tour like that. I've been fortunate enough to do some neat stuff, but outside of them hitting you up. So when you're a kid and you're thinking about being a band, there's no step where you go, oh, I'm going to be Pumpkins. But there is a step where you go, oh, I can play in
my city
of Atlanta,
yeah.
You know? And so that became the like hook that I was like, I just want to jam, you know? And so at those.
My iPad, the bottom. Sorry to interrupt you. Just pass me my iPad. Thank you.
Back in those days, we would just have our own parties so that we could play shows.
Right.
and that's how we would play. And so that was like, that's how we started. That's how I started Norma Jean when I was in like sophomore in high school or whatever it was. So,
You were saying you don't, you know, because lyrically, I've always, I've been a fan of most I mean, I've been a fan of all your bands that you've been a part of at the time that you were a part of them.
Yeah, okay.
I kind of had this, like, disconnect with Norma Jean after you left, as most, as a lot of people, I'd say, maybe did as well. But then I kind of gravitated back toward,
yeah,
toward them.
I think some of their best records was written after me for the record, but
I think the Polar Similar was, like, maybe their best record. That
one of my favorite records, which is, it's always a little odd to say your favorite record is something that's not newest,
right.
But I mean, no disrespect to the band, Corey, you know I love you, but Redeemer is actually my favorite album.
Okay.
And it was like two, maybe three albums after I left. So yeah, I think that was an adult record versus.
I'd like Oh God, the Aftermath too.
Oh yeah. That's what I'm saying. So that's my favorite album they did, but I've liked everything they've done, and Oh God was great. But that's my favorite is Redeemer if I had to pick one.
All right, well, the internet's not working on my iPad, so I'm not going to bring that up. We're just going to wing the rest of it, which is fine. I just won't get to Alex's questions as often as I probably should. But anyway, so how did you, speaking of, like, Norma Jean and the Chariot and all your other bands, how did you kind of, like, gravitate toward the, like, the dissonant, like, weird sound that you guys, like, Norma Jean was, like, one of the big pioneers for?
Again, I think
just listening.
We used
to call them shit notes.
We call them, we've called them horror chords. We've called them squirrely birds, nanner nanners,
yeah.
And, there may be a couple others.
I mean, I fell in
right
love
out.
With that. When I started hearing that, I was like,
same.
What is this?
And we also fell in love. there was a bunch of, I mean, we were listening to everything from.
Were you playing guitar on this time too?
So when I started Norma Jean, I technically played guitar. And then played for a while, but nobody would have ever known. I mean, this was when we were just doing our own parties and stuff, but when we got, even like the earliest inception of even that. But when I got, the second guitarist, I was like, I just want to be a singer. but I think the actual nanner nanner chord, I think we heard Korn do.
Ooh, interesting.
Like, because they do that, you know. They do versions of that. They do the sort of like, here's the right note, but you go one over kind
of
thing.
This is like Life is Peachy kind of vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like Issues, right? We're not talking like
Issues. This was probably the Korn record, the first one.
Self-titled Life is Peachy stuff, yeah.
I know they do, but I mean, you know. We were into that, and some of our earlier stuff maybe resembled that more, but even prior to that, we were doing like Iggy Pop songs and probably sounded more like, you know, or at least trying our best to sound like Unsane and stuff, you know, just very dirty and as we sort of got into different things and stuff, we got more kind of like love Deftones, love Korn. But I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say we just directly took it from them, but I know Korn did those like unsavory notes, you
right.
know, those things. It's like, that's not right, but it sounds great, you know? And so we just kind of did it and we just loved it. We loved the feeling it would give you, you know, and doing things that were incorrect. And it wasn't mathematically incorrect to us. It was just pure ignorance. We didn't know. I mean, I still don't know scales or anything like that, so I don't know, like, if I'm hitting a wrong note, I just know that sounds neat. I like
right.
that, you know, even with 68.
So when you learned guitar, did you just kind of, like, mess around with it?
Yeah.
You didn't, like, take classes or anything?
Yeah.
Because Tim was also like that, Verundra, and I was like, that is insane, because the structure and just the guitar work in both your bands is, like, or, well, I mean, like, you obviously weren't writing a lot of guitar riffs, maybe for the bulk part in, like, the Chariot and Norma Jean, but, like, it's weird to meet people that didn't, like, you know, they weren't trained or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a good bit, and I wrote a ton of the Chariot stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, between all the records and stuff, I definitely wrote a ton of that. And then Norma Jean, I wrote X amount of songs, but the albums I was on, but I think I'm a big fan of knowledge. I really love to know things, but I think when it comes to guitar, I think we were able to create the sound that we did because of our ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
I am not even about to lie to you when I tell you that we were doing some like extensive touring, like quality stuff, not full US touring yet, but not just weekend warrior stuff. I'm talking, we do 2 weeks in the Southeast. We do some like bigger band stuff, and we didn't know that you tune your guitars to a certain note.
Right.
We would tune them to each other, but we, like someone at one point on a tour, not in our hometown, was like, what do y'all tune to?
What?
And we were like, I don't know.
Him?
Yeah, literally, like 100%, like, I don't know. And they were like, what do you mean you don't know? And we were like, "What? I don't even know what you mean. What do you tune to?
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
Are you talking about like standard tuning, drop D or anything like that? Or are you just like...
I'm talking about, so let's pretend standard tuning. We would tune to each other and we knew how to play the power chords.
Mm-hmm.
And so our guitar would be in tune in theory, and it would be in tune to that dude, and it'd be tuned to the bass. But it was because we were like, oh, hit your open. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't own tuners.
Okay.
I wasn't playing guitar at that moment, but like we weren't tuning to a tuner that said, oh, you're in drop C
right,
or whatever.
Right.
We were on a tour when someone was like, what do you tune to? And we were like, I don't know. And then they hooked to their tuner and whatever it was at the time. So I remember being in a van driving to like another show going, I guess we should figure out what we're tuned to, like what we want to tune to,
yeah.
Like having this discussion. And we were talking about bands, you know, like Coalesce and bands. We were like, well, what are they tuned to? And you know, like, so, you know, I mean, our ignorance sort of maybe assisted in us playing these dissonant chords, mm-hmm. and these notes that weren't correct. And like we'd play a riff that's like, oh, that riff sounds neat, you know, but someone who really knew what they were doing on guitar might be like, well, that's not right. You know, you don't do that in the scale of whatever, you know,
yeah.
But we didn't know that. So right. So we just were having fun, you know, and
a lot of good comes from that too.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in not going through that. You could probably get to point A to point B faster, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've had a blast, some of my favorite times was in those days, you know, mm-hmm. and because nothing we were doing was a business. It was just
for fun or
100%
for the passion.
Like
of the
nothing
music, yeah.
involved equaled money. Nothing equaled, yo, it was just like, it could wrap up at any moment. First of all, we're having a blast because we got to go back to high school, next
yeah,
Monday.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like literally some of those, I mean, if we got to do like a week thing or something, you know, we'd have to skip some school and
luckily for you, it wasn't like stuff. You had to, I think now if you miss X amount of days, you got to like, you're automatically.
Yeah. I hear it's crazy. It was a different time.
Yeah, different time
together though.
90s.
It was, you know, it was very like, it was a very unique time, and none of us knew it was a unique time.
Well, yeah,
we didn't know where we were going. But
that particular time frame that we're talking about, you know, golden age of like
yeah.
our particular music scene,
yeah.
You know what I mean? That was really, that's why like nostalgia is such a bad thing, I think, for me, for the scene, because like we were talking about earlier,
sure.
I don't know if it's on the podcast or not, but not that many like, new band, there's a lot. Well, first off, I think there's way too many new bands to keep up with.
Sure,
but there's just like too much going on and stuff.
Well, it's too much, and also there's something to be said about. And this is not a blanket statement. I'm sure there's so many good new bands that exist, but I've produced a few bands here and there, and so I've talked to a bunch of younger bands,
mm-hmm.
and some have this, some don't. When early Norma Jean was doing our thing, when Every Time I Die was doing their thing, when you know, all these bands that were popping up at that point, you know, there's other bands that I know personally that I could vouch for that there was no such thing of, oh man, when we make it, it's going to be a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
The biggest thing that people would compare us to is still a small band that was doing 300 cap rooms
right.
that like I don't want to mention the band's name in case this is embarrassing, but one of the bigger bands that we would sort of be like, dude, you guys are the next. Like, the dude still worked at a pizza shop because he had to pay bills. So the penultimate goal, if you had one, was still, I got to work at a pizza shop and pay bills.
Yeah.
So I say all that to say this. We did it purely out of a love for jamming and music and live show and people and humans mixing with other humans and just mosh pits and like all this like sweat, you know, it was it because there was no such thing. Now, the thing that I said earlier goes to this. A lot of new bands, not all of them, but a ton of them, the very, very, very earliest inclination is business.
Right.
It's, oh man, dude, when we get on a bus, like that'd be, and it's like a bus. Like back in the day, if I was joking about touring on a bus, it would be the equivalent of me now being joking about touring on a private jet.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's just like unfathomable. There's no such thing. Yeah. And that's not my first priority.
Yeah.
Like that's like making it, you know, paying your bills with it. That's not even, that wasn't even on the docket back then.
A lot
then.
Of bands now, I mean, I shouldn't say a lot of bands, but I think that bands now also, you know, they set out because now that road has already been paved.
Yeah.
Like you guys, Every Time I Die, all these other bands have already paved the road for like these bands actually can amount to something next to nothing. So I think a lot of bands that start out, like, Knocked Loose, obviously, is a really big band currently right now. And a lot of people may, like, not have heard of them until, like, this last record or the record that just came out. But, you know, they've also been doing it for a number of years already. So a lot of people kind of, you know, forget that once you hear of a new band, that band's been doing their thing for a hot second. You know what I mean? So,
because I remember when we did a tour, Norma Jean did a tour. It was Converge and Hatebreed. And at that moment, that very, very slice of moment, Hatebreed was like they were breaking boundaries
or something like that.
Or before then, they were still doing like 1,000 cap rooms, like 800 to 1,000.
That's still big as heck back then.
Oh, it was the biggest.
Yeah.
There was nothing bigger as far as I was. I mean, we were like what? Like, and I might have exaggerated. It might have been like 600 to 800. I don't remember exactly.
Just feels like 1,000.
It was so many people, and we were just like, here's a heavy band who's broken through. You know what I mean? And, you know, this day and age, there's bands that, and even Hatebreed went on to do way bigger
crazier
than that.
Shit.
Yeah, but like at that time, I remember just being like, we're about to be on this tour. This is the biggest thing ever, you know? And so again, when I say all that, I want to just sort of hark one more time back on the fact that some newer bands, I think when you're like, let's start a band, and that first priority is some sort of fame or some sort of notoriety or some sort of I can make it, whatever that means,
selling out,
like,
so to speak.
When that's your first initial thing, I think, who am I and who cares, but I think that can definitely hinder the whole process of like, hey,
for sure,
how about being five buds that love hanging out? And because if you get stuck sweating in a van together, you got to be able to like chill and kick it and like not hate each other. But if your only thought process is like touring in a bus, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. No matter how much you put that out in the universe.
And therefore when it doesn't happen, you feel like you have failed. When I have technically toured in a bus a couple times, but because of weird circumstances, but it's like, if that was my only goal or my only barometer for success, I would have, this whole thing would have been failing.
Right.
Every band would have failed.
Right.
As far as Wild Style is in it, you know, but for me, it became a success the moment I was having fun playing a show.
Yeah.
Whether it's local town USA, Atlanta for 40 kids, it's like, I'm playing a show.
Well, my band never made money one bit, and we would tour.
Me neither.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
My band never did anything. I mean, not as far as like financially went, but like, again, best times.
Dude.
Best times of my life were spent.
It is the best.
And you know, the thing is, like, for bands, this could probably be helpful for bands that are like hitting the road and just like slumming it and just like, it's hard out there. Though looking back, those rough times are much better than even the good times on tour. Because it's just like, oh wow, I can't believe we slept in the parking lot in New Jersey in the middle of summer. You know what
For
I mean?
Sure.
The door is open and we're just like, ugh, sweating our balls off. So that kind of stuff always sticks with you.
And those are the stories you tell later.
Yeah.
You don't tell the story of, like, going into a hotel and sleeping good for 8 hours and then waking up the next day and leaving.
And partly that's not even part of the whole...
Yeah.
That's not even part of the whole gimmick, so to speak, of being in that kind of band. That's just like a...
It's all about the adventure.
Yeah.
It's the adventure. And, like, that's the thing that I think people want to just skip that first step and go straight to touring on a bus or whatever. And it's like... Honestly, if you can do that, cool, go for it. Why not, I guess. But for me, I've never been interested in that part of rock and roll or whatever. I've been interested in playing loud music in front of, in front of humans. Even so, 68's been fortunate enough. We've done some stadium rock tours and stuff, and they're nice. I'm not going to complain about, you know, 3,000 people being at a show every night, but... There's a 13-foot barricade. I mean, it's just heads, you know?
It's a different thing, yeah.
To be, I don't want to sound ungrateful because I love the opportunity, but I'm here to look out and see humans. You know, I want to see a full body. I want to look out and that's the interact. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I enjoy playing loud music and the camaraderie of other people. When it's that big of a thing, I mean, it's just me and Nico jamming and
right.
for each other. Like, we're at practice, Michael, you know, because, yeah. because there's 13 foot away is the nearest soul and yeah. that, and I can't interact with them. And they, then it starts to become like, if that's where I lived, I don't live there. So I don't have to like really cross this bridge. But if I lived there, if a band I was in ever made it to a level, like I would then force a way to interact really hard. I don't know. I don't know what that looks like because I don't have to do it, but I would make it my own thing and mm-hmm. feel like, okay, there's a lot of people, but somehow I can make them individual humans. But for now, because I live where I live, and from time to time I dip my toe into some big stadium tour that we get fortunate enough to do, it honestly just becomes, you know, you're just looking out at a sea of people and you're just kind of like, we're just going to jam for each other. It's like, it's me and Nico show.
Here we go again.
Like, yeah. Like shaking his hand going, this is neat. But, you know, like I like interacting with people and that's, you know, that's the stuff that I think, for me anyway, that's the heart and soul of it. Cause everything else is just kind of like, I don't know, like money's neat. We need it. but once it gets to that level, it's just, I mean, I would imagine it very, very difficult not to phone it in a lot. Because you're you're not seeing
faces. Have you seen Motley Crue lately?
I have not.
Google or YouTube some of their latest live shows.
Yeah, okay. That
phoning it in is...
How would you not? I don't know how you would. I mean, but if that's your thing every single day.
I think they're used to it, though. You know, and that might be... You know, that's what I was going to say, too, because, like, you... You seem to love to challenge yourself. That's why I kind of feel like, not to bring up past bands again, but I feel
that the band gets big, I quit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So like,
I've been called out before on that. It's fun.
But you know, it's one of those things where like, even I can't even think to myself if I were, I mean, I'm kind of starting a band now, but like, I don't ever foresee myself doing even like a festival or something like
that.
Because like, that's not something, all the music that I really, truly am passionate about inside this kind of genre, it speaks to you way better in a more intimate venue
for sure,
rather than like a stadium thing. And like, you know, talking to like Tim about going on tour with like Alice in Chains and stuff like that, like, and Korn, that's just like a crazy experience because like, you know, they're also one of those bands on the cusp of like, if, you know, they could almost kind of, they've broken through a little bit, but they, you know, took time off and they can kind of break through again. But it's just, like you're saying, there's a giant disconnect between a band like that. And, you know, it's just, cause like you said, most of those fans of these particular bands had to seek them out, especially in our time.
Right.
Cause no one was telling us about like,
for sure,
hey, you should listen to this.
That's why it's usually a smarter audience that listens to 68 or every time. It's usually predominantly a more intelligent audience, you know, because no one was just throwing it at them constantly and then it just stuck and they're like, I like this. It's like, you know, they had to, like you said, they literally had to reach out, you know, grab a hold of it, bring it in, and then I'm sure some bands, they went, oh, I'm not into this. But, you know, it's an investment to mm-hmm. some degree. And so I think it produces a far more intelligent, not to say, you know, some Taylor Swift crowd's not intelligent. I'm sure they are.
The music, but, however, though, just might not be as intelligent.
Well, I'm not even saying that necessarily. I'm just saying on an average sort of broad stroke, it's very Taylor Swift crowds or Taylor Swift crowds. There's so many people. There's bound to be intelligent folks. But when you look at our world,
there too.
When you look at our world, you almost are setting a standard just by how hard it was to get back in the day. Nowadays with streaming, it's a little easier, yeah. But you still have to dig in and go, oh, they came out with a new CD. I've got to jam it and listen to it.
MySpace, I think, was a big thing for, yeah. I mean, I bring it up all the time, but only because like that was insane to find bands on, and there's nothing really even like that now other than like streaming platform,
yeah,
and maybe like, you know, blogs and webzines and stuff like that. But before all that, you know, there was MySpace, and
yeah,
you know,
I mean, that find started it, as far as I'm aware, like you know, because I was just barely because of Jamie from Hatebreed, he did Headbangers Ball,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there was just the tiniest touch of me living in some sort of world where you had to have MTV like you. You like MTV?
Yeah, she's back.
You had to. If MTV wasn't into you, where else are they going to see your stuff, yeah. If you're not on the radio or whatever? So I just barely touched it a bit. I don't know all the ins and outs of it. But now we live in a world where, like, if I go, yo, you should check this band out. Right now, you can check them out.
I gotta show them.
I don't need MTV. I don't need the radio necessarily. I just need some people who are kind of stoked, who are willing to be like, yo,
I'll check it out.
I saw this cool show. You should go see this band. And then that person right then and there goes, okay, I'll check it out right now. But, and then you either like it or you don't, but at least you know about it. Versus back in the day where, I mean, you had to actually, like, submit to them. Yeah. You had to like, oh, I remember I did this interview one time and it was like, no name I had ever heard of. she's like, I'm trying to hang out with Josh, bud.
He's just wanting to be in your lap, but you're going to have hair all over you. So.
But I did this one interview ages ago when that was happening. And it was for something I'd never even heard of, but all my team of folks was going, yo, they're in cahoots with MTV. You should do this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so like, like it was like some like two in the afternoon interview of some big festival thing. And I was like, I don't want to go all the way out there and try to do this interview thing, yeah. You know? And like, and they're like, oh, they're in cahoots with MTV. You should do it and all this stuff. And I was just like, well, you know, and again, it was that whole mentality of like, you gotta get.
Do you need that?
You gotta get MTV on your side,
mm-hmm.
You know, and so I don't remember my point other than saying nowadays I think it's a lot easier. When MySpace happened, when Facebook happened, all these things, these are things that I know bigger bands, it's easy to make the argument, oh, no one's making money anymore because of all these things. It's true. You can't pretend that's not happening, but for bands I've been in, it's only made it more accessible. If someone's like, hey, there's this crazy band you should check out, boom, you can go to YouTube right now and you can check it out. And you
definitely levels the playing field of it, a kind of.
It helped bands I was in. I mean, again, bigger bands, you know, they probably saw their money just drop a ton.
Oh, yeah.
But I never saw my money go up, so I never had to worry about it going down. So for me, it was
But
just
should
like,
their money have been up there in the beginning to begin with? Because, like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, most of that stuff was force-fed upon people in general. So, of course, they're like, I have an argument about the Beatles. I'm not, like, the biggest Beatles fan.
Ooh, easy.
I know.
I love
but
the Beatles.
But they also, like, they happen to be a band that was lucky at that time. There was only, like, three...
Stations everywhere. Yeah.
So when something's on the television, most America was already glued to it anyway.
Sure.
So like if the Beatles or something like the Beatles were to come out today, I mean like boy bands come out all the time. You know? I'm not saying that the Beatles were technically a boy band, but
right.
It's one of those things where like I feel like get looked down upon a lot because I'm like, the Beatles are just the Beatles to me.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, they wrote their songs and all that, this, that, the other, but they also had the ability to be like the one band.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. I still love the Beatles, but, I think every band in the history of ever is just kind of trying to do sort of what the Beatles are doing or Zeppelin or whatnot, you know, but, but I mean, it is true, but there has to be something to be said about, well, what did the Beatles do that made the Beatles the Beatles
versus
X band that also existed? Or there had, presumably there was more bands prior to them that never actually did that
thing. I always wondered about that too. Cause I always wondered, like, there had to have been neighborhood bands with the Beatles. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? They all had to jam out and play shows at some point. And so, like, who were these other bands?
I mean, let's talk about Elvis and let's talk about Johnny Cash and all them. Before the Beatles, you know, they were, I love Walk the Line, that movie, but I read Johnny Cash's book before the movie came out, and it talked about them touring, but they're driving themselves from point A to point B. The scene in the movie is so good. It's like June Carter, Johnny Cash, Elvis, I think Roy Orbison, and maybe someone else, and they're all in this like station wagon driving themselves, and like someone's got their feet like right there, and they're like, ah. And it's like, here's these, like, for us, these gigantic,
monstrous,
like, they started it all. They invented touring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally invented it. And, but, you know, like, we were talking about younger bands now being like, oh, man, touring the bus.
Yeah.
Here's these people who are huge, and they're just driving themselves because that's all you knew to do, you know, or whatever.
And it's humanizing.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think the moment something does break or something does happen good for you, whatever, maybe you're far more grateful for it, and you're so much more able to go, this is amazing, because remember when we were driving ourselves around, you know, or whatever, but
splitting gas.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially then, gas was like, what, 5 cents a gallon or something?
So there's those bands who sort of forced it into existence. Maybe they didn't. Maybe the right people knew.
No, I mean, I think you're right.
They forced it into existence, and then in Beatles were able to kind of jump on that bandwagon that they, you know, they had paved the road for the Beatles, and then the Beatles paved the road for everyone else, for the Stones, and then everyone else was able to jump in on all that, you know, and like, and so, you know, it, in a lot of ways, it's just been getting easier and easier and easier, you know. I mean, now all I need to tour is this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the only thing I need to tour with. This is my tour manager. This is my maps. This is my music, everything. When I started touring, you know, you had proper maps.
Did like you remember
physical map?
That's something that I can't.
It's a great
equalizer. I can't even like remember. You know what I mean? Like busting out, and pulling over at a rest stop, and busting the atlas out, and being like, "All right, where are we going? Like,
yeah,
how do we get
thumbing
there?"
Through it and being like, "Okay, well, we're in this state."
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
where's the VFW hall?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's. I remember when MapQuest came out, and you could like print off the directions.
Yeah.
Oh my
huge.
God,
huge. But the thing is back.
But you always made it where you needed to go.
Yes, eventually. I remember we would drive, like we had shifts, obviously, driving. And I remember when it was your shift and you're driving around and all of a sudden you go, oh, no, I'm going the wrong way. And I know I'm going the wrong way because I hit the wrong state.
Yeah.
A state I should not have ever hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what does this even mean? Like,
hope everyone's
4 or 5 hours. Oh, dude, you're praying they're asleep and you pray you can do this little turn without everyone waking up and just being like, what?
Where were you
at? You drove into the Nebraska or whatever. Yeah. You're like, that's me
crazy.
Too. So, but this is a great equalizer because back in the day, maybe you played great music. Maybe you were a phenomenal songwriter, but you didn't have anyone able to like navigate maps and stuff.
Yeah.
Or you got lost 3 too many times. You're like, this ain't worth it. And you went home and you got a real job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So nowadays you got, everybody can tour. Every single person can pull up a map and I mean you're never lost,
right?
Like and so it's a great equalizer, and in a way it can be a bummer, but in a way it's kind of cool because it's like, well, now we've put all the focus on, is the music good or is the music not good? Because that's more the barometer now.
Yeah,
like I said, person A who couldn't navigate, maybe they wrote phenomenal music but they just never was able to drive safely with someone else looking at the maps because they, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's,
oh yeah, for sure.
And so their band was done. We never heard of it, you know, or whatever.
Do you, does it ever bum you out that there's like good music out there you'll never hear?
All the time.
Yeah.
I think about it way too much.
Yeah.
And then I think about the garbage, some of the garbage that is big and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, that's out here.
Because some of the bands I know, some music, some music I think, oh, this is phenomenal. And then, you know, 2 years later they're done and I'm like, oh, what do we? And they're just like, Dude, I gotta.
What do you mean? There's bands like that.
Yeah. It's a bummer. So, are we done?
Nah, there's a couple things I want to ask really quick. Okay. Again, we're gonna touch base on some older shit. So, apologies.
All good.
Do you ever find it like, because Bless the Martyr is obviously like one of metalcore's like founding records, obviously. So, like, do you ever find it's like hard to live up to that? Before the 68, I should say, because I feel like 68 is a kind of a different offshoot from even the Chariot or whatever. But, like, when you were starting the Chariot and stuff like that, were you worried about, like, coming out from underneath that shadow of some sort?
Not really.
Or were you not part of the band that long to where you never really kind of grasped how big that record was at the time?
I was. I mean, I'm still just me, so it's hard for me to pretend that world exists because I'm just me and like Daniel and Scotty, you know, like all they're just my friends from middle school.
Your boys.
It's hard for me to like take any of that seriously, but I understand, you know, I see that it has sort of paved a road of some sort in some world, and I'm very grateful for that, very honored to do that, to have been a part of that. But when I started the Chariot, it never even crossed my mind to live up to any standard. In fact, our first album was like recorded live and feedback everywhere. I mean, I did everything I could to sort of alienate anything that would have any interest in like any sort of, it was supposed to be it's new thing. Yeah. It's its own thing. And it's not in any way to be compared to that. But the thing is, when I parted ways, like Norma Jean kept going, and they remained some of my longest standing friends, and even at least a couple different variations of Norma Jean that have existed. Mm-hmm. Well, mainly Corey. I mean, I'm good friends with him and still, but even a couple of people that have came in, you know, I know them and stuff really well, and so, so anyone that existed, I was always very proud of. You know, like when I watched Norma Jean, like I was always like, these are my friends. These are in this music that I believe in. When they did Oh God, it was like, this is great music. And when it did Good, I was like, great. And Redeemer, you know, all these things, I'm very, very happy for them. Again, kind of like we were talking about how good music getting big makes you happy.
Right,
you know,
right.
It makes, especially good people. So I was always very, very big fan of Norma Jean, and then them having success. When I started the Chariot, it was in my mind anyway, it was such a different offshoot because you know, they sort of went on to in the tiniest ways, they sort of went on to do some more
they were sonically different a little bit.
I think a lot of bit. They sort of did some stuff that you could assume might make it onto a radio or something. Not that they were like radio rock, but
they were also doing the Ozfest thing a lot too. Like that was that was a big prominent thing.
They were just doing a different thing, and it was awesome, and I was happy for them. But what we were doing with the Chariot was very, very different. And so I never once thought about it as. And also, I know lightning never strikes twice, so I never even. I literally thought the Chariot doing what we did was a big shock for me because I'm fully aware lightning shouldn't strike twice, and so the fact that Norma Jean did what we did. Or, you know, Bless the Martyr did what it did while I was with it. And then what it continued to do, I never once pretended that the Chariot would do any of that. I just was going to stay. I mean, I was just playing music. I didn't really think about it, but I knew it would never do that again.
Mm-hmm.
But the Chariot got to a spot where we were paying our bills and we were doing, really neat tours and fun things really surprised me, and it made it to a point where, I mean, we traveled to Russia 4 or 5 times.
That's crazy.
We did Australia several times. Like all those things are things that are very humbling for me. And then for it to get to a spot where it literally got as big as it was, and then we decided to part ways.
Because again, you just like to make it hard for yourself, you know.
I love the struggle. I find beauty in it. But
I'm too big. I gotta go.
When we parted ways, you know, and I started 68, I again was like, cool. Well, lighting will surely not be in my favor here. And so far so good. It's been very, very nice. I've done some of the bigger tours I've ever done in 68 as far as supporting other bands.
Stone Sour is one of them.
We've done Stone Sour. We did Bring Me the Horizon in the States.
That's
and
the
in,
question
and
Alex
the,
had.
What?
Which bands were more receptive to the 68? Was it the Stone Sour crowd or Bring Me the Horizon?
It's hard to know.
Cause I feel like Bring Me the Horizon at least is somewhat in the same ballpark as like hardcore and metal because like they're different now.
There's a connection with us and Bring Me. I've toured the Chariot tour with Bring Me a few different times. So if you know Bring Me, you might have known the Chariot and you might maybe know 68. Also, I sang on one of their songs on one of the records. And so again, a small connection. Having said that, I think it's trivial. If I had to just throw money down on something, I would say maybe Stone Sour was a little more receptive to us, but that doesn't mean the Bring Me crowd was
not
bad.
Feeling it. Yeah,
they definitely were feeling it, and I've definitely seen a benefit of touring with them. We did an Australia run with them, and it was just as big as – I mean, it was proper arenas and two nights in a row. So, I mean, they're just as big as can be and great dudes and very – thankful that they decided to take us out because they didn't need us. You know what I mean? The shows were like sold out well before we got announced.
We need to sell some more tickets. Get Josh and the boys.
No, they were like, we're already sold out. Who should we take? And they were super nice and brought us out for whatever reason. So, but we did a tour after that. So that was Australia. We did a tour, I don't know, a year or two after that in Australia, and we definitely saw a clear bump in our shows
because of
them, you know? Yeah. And so, so I think those crowds were really into what we were doing. But with Stone Sour, well, the only thing I can say with Stone Sour is that it was more recent. The Stone Sour was that last year maybe or a year before? I don't know. It was recent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas the Bring Me shows were a couple of years prior to that. So presumably I'm better at my instrument, better at making my sound sound the way it does.
Especially your current band.
Yeah. So I'm presumably better at singing, better at performing, whatever, you know? And so, I think that helped with the Stone Sour. That's the only reason I would even barely say maybe Stone Sour crowd reacted to us a little bit even better. Just based on,
I've been in that band for a little bit longer. And
as soon as we'd end, I mean, they would, I mean, there was a couple shows where they were like chanting our name, which just like, that's fun, you know, and I think it was, you know, maybe just because we had been a band a little longer, people maybe were there for us as well as Stone Sour.
Well,
maybe,
it's a unique
site
too. Just you guys up there, you know what I mean? Just flashing it around.
Well, visually, I think that throws people like, wait, what? There's only two dudes.
Do you have like a bass kind of pedal?
How do you
like supplement the sound with that?
I split my signal three ways. So it comes out of my guitar, goes into a splitter. A goes to like whatever pedals I feel like that guitarist would use, goes to a head, goes to a cab. B goes into whatever pedals I think that guitarist would use, pedals, and then a head, and then a cab. And then C drops an octave down, goes into a couple pedals, and then bass out in the front. So when it works, it feels real nice, you know.
Does it work all the time?
Nope. I don't have any crew or guitar techs or anything, so there's plenty of times where I'm just kind of like
whatever, yeah. Screw it.
So that might be a poignant reference to note on the longer I am in this band, the better I can make my sound better because some money comes in and I'm able to try this pedal out or try that, or some guy told me, hey, you should check this out.
So there's never going to be like a second guitar player or a bass player in 68, huh?
I don't think so. You look at Black Keys, they were two piece forever and then they became a five piece sort of thing that I'll never say never. But for me,
I didn't know that they became a full band. I've only seen them as a two piece.
So I don't know what they would consider themselves, but I've seen them live. There's the two dudes and then not hidden away, but just in the back, you'll see
other
guitarists
and
bass and stuff. But, so I'll never say never, but I have right now when I started 68 on the heels of the Chariot, the whole thing for me was how can I take something I'm pretty comfortable with, which is touring and playing live shows, and flip it on its head? How can I struggle? The thing we already talked about.
How can I make it?
How can I make it more difficult for myself?
I'll do the drums myself as well.
Yeah, and so I came to the point where I went, oh, I can play guitar. I can learn these pedals. I can learn. I didn't even know if you could split the signal like that. Mm-hmm. I was learning all that on my own, and yeah. And so here I am now, X amount of years later, and I've got a slight handle on it, and I think it's hopefully getting just better and better as the years go by and as I learn more and more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's fun. It's fun. I do. You know, there's times where this one's got some tremolo, and this one's got a different thing, so it hopefully feels very wide, you know, and that's part of the show. That's part of, yeah, we have our songs, but that's part of, hopefully, the aesthetic is how much noise can two guys make
right.
and not have a computer just doing it.
It definitely sounds full.
Good.
I mean, like, because I remember we saw, the first time I saw you live, the only time. Tonight I'll see you live as well, but
the future,
yeah. Rockville, you guys played Rockville,
yeah,
in
yeah.
Your, last, not this past one, but the year before,
yeah.
And yeah, I remember just going like, wow, like I mean, I obviously already knew you as a showman, so mm-hmm. it wasn't like that. Not that that didn't blow me away, but just like, holy crap, it does kind of sound like a full band
cool.
up there. You know what
good,
I mean?
Good.
So like,
yeah.
And it was a pleasurable experience watching you all do that. So
I will say this, big, gigantic shows that we were talking about, earlier, the 13 foot barricades yeah. and the Rockvilles and stuff. Sound wise, I have no complaints because those shows, I mean, even just me and my monitor world,
right.
I don't hear what y'all are hearing, but in my monitors, it is massive and it just sounds so, whereas shows like tonight, which are super cool and definitely more where I almost feel at home more.
The equipment isn't as
it's just
good.
Different.
Yeah.
It's just different. And I mean, talking about Rockville, I remember that one and the other Florida one we do, those specifically just, they make it just sound so
great.
Beefy and so
I remember
good.
The cop. I remember there was like a cop just like blocking off the street, like an overhang and you kind of like pointed him out during the show. And I was like, I wonder if that cop is like a fan of any of this stuff. Cause like, if he is, that's cool. He gets to see like one of the
ticket.
Main stages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
fucking, it was weird.
That's funny.
I have one more question, I guess. And then we'll kind of wrap it up. Cause yeah, the show is about to start. And I know JP wants to go check out all the bands. Tonight.
They're all great.
One of the Chariot songs, Cheek.
Okay.
What made you put the Great Dictator speech in there?
Have you heard the speech?
Of course. I mean, and what's weird about it is like, I just recently had heard it prior to that album coming out. And me being a conspiracy guy or whatever, I like gravitated toward it. And I was like, that's crazy that the Charlie Chaplin movie from like the 40s or whatever
so long ago.
Was saying that and how like kind of that already played out.
Dude,
so
I heard it and it moved me. And
it still does.
I'm telling you, it still does. And I wanted to be a part of it. I know that sounds insane because it's so long ago and I'm so newish, but it was everything I loved and it was everything that I believed in and wanted to just, and so the moment I heard it, I was like, I think I can write something that can maybe not do it justice, but give it a bed to lay in and let him do his thing. And I didn't want to recreate it. I didn't want to do my own version. I didn't want to do, you can't. Because it came from so long ago and because he had that foresight to talk about things that were happening then, but now it's like we didn't go anywhere positive.
Right.
We're still in we're still in the same pickle he's talking about.
80 years later or whatever.
So what's funny, I'll tell this story. So I did the song, I wrote that song, and again, it's barely a song, it's like a bookend thing, and then a bed for him to lay in.
Still, as a song, it is great, even with the beginning,
well,
and
thank
the outro,
you.
And that speech inside.
Thank
it's
you.
It's a good package.
I'll tell you two quick stories. One, I sent it all to the label, and they heard that and was like, oh, we gotta get...
released.
What? Like, and they were like, trying to be like, well, you know, it probably costs too much money, like, blah, blah, and I was like, we can't not do it. Like, there's no other version. There's no other, they had suggested ideas of just me coming up with some new stuff. And I'm like, it has to be that. So I wasn't there with them, but so the story goes, I hope I'm saying her name right. I think Dorothy might be his great granddaughter or something like that. And I used to know these facts really well, but I haven't had to say this story in a while. But anyway, basically, whoever you would talk to get Charlie Chaplin stuff sorted had no internet. So they had to mail her something, I think, or something. They got in touch with her. They had to fly in. They had to meet with her at her house and show her.
How old is this person?
I think pretty old.
Yeah, I was saying.
I want to say it's either a great-granddaughter or a granddaughter. I don't know. Again, I knew all this stuff at the time, but I haven't said it in a while. But basically, they had to get it approved. And time-wise and everything else, no internet and stuff. They had to just basically fly. So they met with her. They showed her the thing. Imagine. Which I was just like,
yeah,
that's not going to work.
Yeah. This is wonderful.
And she approved it. And we got the full write-off for it. So we, kudos to the label. Kudos to anyone in doing that. So that's one story, which was super cool because there's, you know, I mean, she may have just not even cared, but the fact that she had to listen to the Chariot is so bummer. This nice old lady, this nice old lady had to be had to sort like, out
yeah,
through
okay,
that.
Cool.
She's like,
my hat cap or something.
Will you stop it if I sign it? Then yeah, let's get out of here. So that story really touched my heart and made me feel real nice and real special. Even though I wasn't there, I just was like, that's neat, you know. The second story is, when we decided to part ways as the Chariot, when we wrote that record, we didn't know it was going to be the last record.
Mm-hmm.
We just wrote a record and then went on tour. And when we decided to part ways, it was all a very mutual thing. And we were all like pretty happy with it. We were like, yeah, let's just do that. And we had talked briefly, like, cause I had a couple songs that I'd already written. Like I said, I'm always writing. So I had a couple songs I'd already written for what would be the next album and stuff. And so we were like, well, do we put out something new and say that? And then we were just sitting there, and the more we talked about it, the more like, I couldn't force a better final song
right.
from a band.
I was just thinking
because
that.
Of that Charlie Chaplin speech, nothing because of what I written, but just if I, all I would be trying to do, whatever the song that ends the next record, all I would be trying to do is top that because that is the greatest final song that a band could put out,
mm-hmm.
in my humble opinion, not the greatest song of band, but just to say farewell.
Right.
Even my lyrics, that I don't know them off the top of my head, but it's something about it's a great wrap up. But with that speech mainly, I was like, I think this is it. I don't think there's anything we do. We'll just be forcing it, you know? And because of that speech being there, I think, which some people might be bummed at because they'd be like, well, we could have had more material, but
well, now we can't.
Never again. but because that was in there, it was just like, there's nothing that's going to top that. That's mm-hmm. the best way a band could exit the scene, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's that, because of that speech, we literally decided to not do anything else, just do a farewell tour and call it.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I mean, like, if you haven't heard that speech, I would go ahead and just definitely either A, listen to Cheek because it's in there, or just go watch the clip of it YouTube. It's from, like,
the whole movie's good.
Or something.
The whole movie, I've never seen the movie. I think it's called The Great Dictator or something. Like, it's a good
movie. He's playing like a Hitler-esque type person, right?
He looks like Hitler.
Okay.
You have to see it, but basically when he gives that speech, it's sort of the whole, like, pivotal thing of the movie.
Do you have a name for the new album?
I don't officially. There's a pool of things it might be, but I don't want to even say those just yet.
Okay.
Again, we just finished recording, so it's all still being sort of like tossed around in my head because the moment it comes out is the moment it's official.
Right.
I might change.
We're just trying to get a little news clip off of you. You know what I mean?
I don't want to pull a Kanye and change the name three times before I come out with a record.
Well,
you know,
this is like an active. That's something I kind of feel like you could do. Like you as an artist, not like Kanye.
I'm basically Kanye.
Yeah.
Very little difference.
How is your Sunday service extraordinaire extravaganza?
Oh, our
thing.
Sunday services are wonderful. We had one last Sunday. Yeah. It was phenomenal.
But he seems like he kind of seems to be like he could do like a project and have it be like an active project after its release. Because Life of Pablo, I think he changed a couple times, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you guys could do that because you don't...
What do you mean by
like
active?
Changing the songs.
Like even after it's come out or whatever? I think that involves... I think when you have money, that becomes easier. Because you can go... You can go, oh, I'm going to just change everything today. And the labels go, no, 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 no. And you go, oh, I'm Kanye. I am going to do that. Yeah. Whereas if I'm like, oh, we're going to change everything.
Label's my name's
like,
Josh and I want to do that.
The label's like, well, we spent this much money. No, you're not. Yeah. And I'd be like, fair enough. Because I can't pay for it. So you're good to go. So I have to make sure everything's solid before I like, you know, go into it, you know, so.
Before you abandon it, as you so to speak.
Well, yeah, before I just let it go into the world and be like, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. You should probably smash that like button and subscribe if you've liked this content, like Josh was telling me to tell you. And obviously go follow the 68, or not the 68, the 68. Nope. They are 68.
There you go. You don't have to. You just, just come to a show.
Buy some merch.
Just come to a show. Buy merch is cool. Just come to a show. I don't even care if you like anything or tag anything. Coming to a show is the whole thing. That's what's fun. We'll just hang out, shake hands, get to see each other's faces. It's great.
You could be drunk. You can be drunk. He is very okay with dealing with you and recording you doing something stupid, probably.
I'll lean into it. It's great.
Anything else before we head out of here that you want to touch
I'm
base
golden.
On?
Let's see. Do we cover caffeine? Coca-Cola.
Bad eating habits. I'm glad we didn't really get too deep into like Norma Jean Chariot stuff.
I think we did all right.
Yeah. I already knew that you didn't want to do that. I already knew that.
It's a tricky thing for me because I love those bands. I'm very proud of the things.
But you don't want your
image
to be
bad.
But
I'm not here to talk about nostalgia so much. I mean, let's keep the past where it belongs and let's move forward. That's my thoughts anyway.
Well, we need to get you to the ball.
Yes.
So, we'll just, ending it's also as hard as like starting it. So Look, we're out.
Just cut it. Yeah. Fade to black. Boom. Done.
Hello out there.
Yes. Hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.